Hello and welcome to QuidAchievit's Markets Uncut podcast, your weekly insight into the topics and trends that we have been exploring for you here at QuidAchievit. Remember, so you don't miss future episodes, be sure to hit the follow button on whichever streaming platform you are listening on, or by following hashtag QC Weekly Comment on LinkedIn. I'm your host, Andrew Cartwright, investment manager based at our Birmingham office. And this week, I'm delighted to be joined by Richard Carter, our head of fixed interest research, and equity analyst, Sheena Berry. Welcome, Richard and Sheena. So a few weeks ago and following President Trump's inauguration, Richard and I talked about the impact that Trump could have on the financial markets and how we look to manage the uncertainty that his unique presidential style brings. And Rich, I think we recognize that what much of Trump says is about negotiation tactics, but of course that can only work if they are viewed as credible threats. And lastly, did actually start off with those proposed tariffs being imposed on Mexico, Canada, and China. And since then, he's been talking about further tariffs, which in addition to Canada, would impact countries that the US perhaps would naturally consider as allies. And just over the course of the last weekend, we have heard that 25% tariffs will be imposed on all steel and aluminium imports into the US. And supposedly this is due to start with immediate effect. Richard, could you bring us up to date with the events around those tariffs and the market reaction and implications? And given the current level of global geopolitical uncertainty, could the US be alienating its allies? And could that sort of be a risky tactic for Trump, which might ultimately backfire?
Yeah, it might well be, Andy. I mean, I think, it's dizzying trying to keep up with all this daily sort of change of mind from Trump in terms of what he's going to do. I mean, as you say, we had the initial 25% tariffs on Canada and Mexico at the beginning of last week, which was subsequently paused following negotiations. But the ones with China, 10% tariffs on China have gone ahead, and China has reciprocated, albeit in a measured and targeted way. But those have started this week. So, trade tensions certainly are building. And then obviously we've heard about the aluminium and steel tariffs, which again, 25%, that will impact countries like Canada and Mexico quite a lot. So it is quite dizzying. Hopefully a lot of it is bluff and negotiation tactics from Trump. It certainly seems to be at the moment. But clearly, if these things go through, it's not good for growth. It pushes up inflation as well in the States. And overall, it's not a great situation for the global economy at all. I mean, I think in terms of, upsetting allies and almost treating allies worse than maybe US treating its enemies, that is a bit of a strange one. But I think there's places like EU, Japan, Canada and Mexico will, again, as we said, see it all as a bit of a negotiation. They'll be able to separate trade talks from the wider relationship. So hopefully, as you say, given all the sort of geopolitical problems at the moment, it won't have more wider implications. And I think certainly in terms of, market reaction, I think it's been pretty sanguine. I mean, initially there was quite a big sell-off when the Canada and Mexico tariffs were imposed. But I think scroll forward a week, markets really kind of want to wait and see exactly what is done, exactly what is implemented, and not just what Trump says on Air Force One, flying back from the Super Bowl or whatever. So I think investors are very much in sort of wait and see and hope for the best mode.
And it's also been a busy week here in the UK in sporting and economic terms, with the Six Nations well underway and the FA Cup fourth round taking place, as well as the Bank of England meeting on Thursday to set interest rates. And certainly a bit of giant killing going on with a great result for Plymouth Argyle beating Liverpool and Queen's Park beating Rangers. But Richard, with Spurs being knocked out both the Carabao and the FA Cup within just a few days, you perhaps want to move on quickly to that Bank of England decision. And that resulted in a 25 basis point cut from 4.75% to 4.5%. So, Richard, that interest rate cut was widely expected, and indeed it was a unanimous decision across all the members of the Monetary Policy Committee, and to even call for a bigger cut, and further cuts are anticipated during the year. But The primary objective of the MPC is to manage inflation down towards a target rate of 2%. And whilst the latest report showed headline inflation was down slightly from previous months, it is still above that target. And the Bank of England's own outlook suggests that inflation could actually go back up to 3.7% by mid-2025. And so, Richard, based on that most recent inflation data and outlook, surely the bank could have been justified in not cutting rates at all. So what did you make of the interest rate cut decision? And perhaps more importantly, the accompanying rationale and comments that came out from the Bank of England?
Well, let's be honest. I think it's not a very happy mix, is it? Weaker growth, high and near-term inflation. And let's not forget, Labour very much elected on a promise of getting the economy going. And then and ever since the budget, it's all been kind of doom and gloom. So that's, it's not a particularly good backdrop at the moment. I mean, I think the rate cut made a lot of sense. They're clearly, the committee is clearly concerned about where the economy is going in terms of sort of confidence and a lack of economic growth, big downgrades to their forecasts. So the interest rate cut does make sense. But, their hope, what we're obviously going to see, as they've mentioned, this sort of spike in near-term inflation driven by various things like energy costs and educational cost rises, national insurance, things like that all going up. Their hope, and forgive me if you've heard this before during COVID, their hope that these sorts of near-term inflation, this near-term inflation spike will be transitory, will be temporary and won't spill over in second round effects. Now we heard that, from the Fed when the whole post-COVID inflation thing was going on. It turned out not to be transitory, but certainly the Bank of England is taking the bet that, this rise in near-term inflation won't last for very long. It won't lead to, big rise in wages or the rest of it. And they need to get ahead of that and start to think about where the economy will be next year. And their view is, interest rates are too high at the moment. And one of the best ways to get growth going and ultimately to keep inflation around target is to start cutting now. So it makes sense, but we'll just have to hope, or they will certainly be hoping, that the inflation spike is short-lived.
And Richard, just to round up the key events of last week, we also had the US non-farm payroll report published. Was that or anything else of particular note? And looking forward, is there anything that you'll be keeping a close eye out for this week?
Well, I'll be waiting for news from Spurs, I think, following what you mentioned about our exits. I fear we may have our latest managerial change coming up fairly soon. But other than that, the payrolls numbers were pretty good, actually, once you delve into the details. US labour market is strong. No sign of a, no sort of chance of a sort of Fed rate cut anytime soon, really, now. They're very much in sort of wait and see mode. This week, we're going to hear more from Jay Powell. He's speaking in front of Congress on a couple of days. And we'll also get US inflation numbers. So that's going to be interesting to watch. But I think markets very much kind of beholden to what Trump's latest thoughts on tariffs are.
Thank you, Richard. And just moving on to Sheena, who is our pharmaceutical and healthcare analyst. And it was just a few years ago that the pharmaceutical sector was very much at the forefront of global news headlines as companies rush to develop, manufacture, and distribute and COVID vaccines around the world. But as we know, financial markets move on very quickly. And since then, the headlines have been dominated by spiking energy prices as Russia invaded Ukraine and resulting inflation and interest rates and US technology stocks, which have been very much the key driver of global financial markets. But the pharmaceutical sector is, of course, still a very much a key sector for global equity markets, and especially in Europe, UK, and the US. But it does seem to have sort of fallen under the radar somewhat since those heady COVID days. See, that we had a lot of pharmaceutical companies reporting last week. And could you give us an update on some of those key results? And have there been any sort of key themes that have emerged in the post-COVID era and perhaps looking forward as well?
Yeah, it's certainly been a busy couple of weeks with results. But You know, the results actually from the healthcare companies have generally been, you know, pretty solid, with a number of large cap pharmaceutical stocks beating expectations and providing reassuring outlooks. So as a result, you know, we have seen some positive share price moves, you know, such as GSK and AstraZeneca last week, you know, with the latter also providing some reassuring commentary around China. But a big theme in 2024, you know, has been with regards to the obesity space, you know, where at the moment, you know, Eli Lilly and Novo Nordisk are companies that are prominent in the space. We did get some, you know, headline clinical data from Novo Nordisk right at the end of 2024, you know, which from a headline perspective proved to be disappointing, but we will get some more detailed insight into that in due course. But, you know, obesity, you know, is a big opportunity. It's associated with over 200 health complications, you know, and the market potential is significant, you know, particularly if the drugs can help, you know, with comorbidities. So there are a number of companies actually looking at developing drugs for weight management. So competition is looming. So, you know, it is an area where there has been a lot of focus, but, you know, we will continue to hear more as well going forward. So, you know, obesity and weight management is very much an ongoing theme. But generally, though, you know, healthcare fundamentals remain strong. We've got, you know, a growing and aging population. So the number of people over the age of 65 is likely to double by 2050, you know, and as a result, demand for healthcare is going to increase. And really what can help with that is innovation, you know, that has the potential to help save the industry significant amounts of money, you know, increase productivity and help address unmet needs. You know, and R&D innovation, you know, is actually very healthy within the healthcare sector. And 2025, you know, is a pretty big year for a number of phase three clinical trial readouts. You know, and these are the kind of catalysts that are actually very important within the pharmaceutical space, and it's an important driver. So it's not really all about what's going on in relation to obesity and you know, the trial readouts in that space. There are lots of clinical data due, you know, in other areas such as cancer, you know, which also have big market opportunities. But during, you know, the company updates recently, you know, there was a lot of emphasis on pipeline opportunities ahead. There's also some commentary around, you know, policy and regulation in the sector. But, you know, the fundamental outlook within the pharma sector, you know, certainly remains solid.
Just to sort of bring the conversation back to sort of, Trump, I mean, we talked earlier about his impact on equity markets. And I think we sort of recognise that there will be some sectors that, that benefits from Trump's policies and some don't. But with regards to healthcare, during his first term, the Republican Party was unsuccessful in repealing and replacing the Affordable Care Act and in lowering drug prices. However, healthcare wasn't really an area that featured that much in Trump's election campaign this time round. So it's perhaps difficult to know what the impact might be on the healthcare and pharmaceutical sector during the second term. And since Trump's inauguration, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. has been appointed to lead the U.S. Department of Health. And he's perhaps best renowned for his controversial views on vaccines. So, Sheena, whilst I wouldn't ask anyone to predict what any of Trump's policies may or may not be, but from an investment perspective, is there anything that you'll be paying particular close attention to, whether that be threats or even opportunities for the sector?
Yeah, I mean, healthcare didn't actually really feature much from either political party in the election campaign, you know, which was probably a little surprising. I mean, quite often, you know, we hear about potential proposals to reduce drug pricing. You know, drugs typically cost more in the US than any other country, you know, which is why Trump proposed a most favored nation pricing model, you know, in his first term. You know, drugs in the US are probably about, you know, 10 to 15% of overall healthcare expenditure, you know, and whilst it hasn't really been something in focus yet, you know, it does not mean that nothing will happen with regards to drug pricing. So it is certainly something to keep an eye on there. But, you know, there is uncertainty, you know, around the impact of the new US administration. You know, when RFK Jr.'s nomination was announced sort of at the end of 2024, there was a bit of a sell-off in some pharmaceutical stocks, you know, especially companies with a vaccines portfolio, you know, given that, you know, he has been viewed as a vaccine skeptic. He was also critical, you know, of the FDA, so that's the US regulator that is responsible for drug approvals. But, you know, the Senate hearing, you know, has now taken place, you know, and RFK Jr. went on the record saying that he was not anti-vaccine, and he sort of redirected focus to sort of nutrition and general health, and that he supports transparency. So what, you know, RFK Jr. may actually try and implement sort of really remains to be seen, you know, and whilst there is still, you know, some uncertainty, I do think, you know, the initial fears, you know, from when the nomination of RFK Jr. was first announced, you know, seem to have alleviated, you know, a little. But, you know, in terms of what have we actually seen, you know, so far, so there was an announcement at the end of last week, you know, that biomedical research funding was being cut, you know, which will likely create a bit of a headwind for the academic market. And we also can't ignore potential, you know, tariffs, although historically, you know, pharma has been excluded from international tariffs. So we do need to wait and see, you know, what might be implemented and what might happen within healthcare. The US is an important market, you know, for large healthcare companies, you know, given large cap pharma typically generate probably 40 to 50% of sales from the country. So, you know, if anything drastic is announced, it can have a big impact on certain areas within healthcare. So we'll sort of need to wait and see, you know, what could potentially, you know, be implemented and, you know, whether the likes of, you know, drug pricing gets targeted.
Thank you, Sheena and Richard, for those great insights, and to you all for listening. Did you enjoy our discussion on the podcast today? We love to hear from our listeners, so please review the show now wherever you're listening and share it on your socials and tag us at FoodAchieveIt. To make sure you don't miss a future episode, tap the subscribe button. We'll be back next week, and in the meantime, head over to our website, www.foodachieveit.com, where you can read the accompanying market overview, as well as subscribe to our weekly comment newsletter. You can also stay up to date with our thoughts on market news, industry insights, and our upcoming events and webinars on our website or our social media pages. Finally, do you have any questions you'd like to ask of our experts for our next podcast? Simply ask them via the weekly comments page on our website. We love to hear your questions. And that's it for today. So thank you again to Richard and Sheena for your time today, and to you all for listening. See you next time.